From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Wednesday edition, President Trump has announced he is halting funding to the United Nations World Health Organization while his administration looks into the WHO's cover-up of China's deception. Some lawmakers have applauded this move. Missouri Senator Josh Hawley said, quote, the WHO has become a propaganda arm of the Chinese Communist Party and is filled with CCP apologists, end quote. Also, as Mitch McConnell stated yesterday on Washington Watch, the payroll protection plan may be out of money by the end of the week as Democrats demand more money for projects unrelated to the coronavirus relief. Has any progress been made in the last 24 hours? House Minority Whip Steve Scalise is here in just a moment on all of that and possibly more. And yesterday we touched on the topic of mail-in ballots. More states moving in that direction. Brent Kylan, Vice President of FRC Action, is here with what states are changing their election rules and how that might affect you and impact the election. Also, religious freedom was already a problem in India, but conditions have worsened for Christians as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. Ariel Del Turco, Assistant Director for the Center of Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council, explains. And speaking of religion, Pew Research is out with a new survey on whether or not Americans think the Bible should influence our laws here in the U.S. The results might surprise you. David Clawson, FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview, is here for that discussion. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. And by the way, I'll have a little bit later, I'll give you the five winners from yesterday's drawing for General Boykin's new book, Man to Man. That's coming up a little bit later here on Washington Watch. All right, after 600,000 confirmed cases of coronavirus in the United States and nearly 30,000 deaths, President Trump has announced he is halting funding to the United Nations World Health Organization while his administration looks into the WHO's cover-up of China's deception of coronavirus.
Today, I'm instructing my administration to halt funding of the World Health Organization while a review is conducted.
Joining me now on this and more is House Minority Whip Steve Scalise, who represents the 1st Congressional District of my home state of Louisiana. Steve, welcome back to the program.
Tony, always great to be back with you.
So let me ask you this right out of the chute. You support the president in halting funding until we can get to the bottom of how the WHO handled the coronavirus?
I do. I'm really glad President Trump took this action because there have been a lot of concerns raised about WHO and especially their director who's really been a true mouthpiece of the Chinese government when you think about how the Chinese Communist government was responsible for not only what happened in Wuhan where this virus was created, but really it's been the cover-up, the attempt to keep the facts away from the United States and the rest of the world where we could have done a lot to prevent the spread outside of Wuhan, China. And instead, by their cover-up, it may have led to this global pandemic and, of course, all the devastation we're seeing in our country.
You know, I find it interesting the left's response to this, saying that the move could deal a real setback to world health because WHO is needed to combat disease, in particular the coronavirus, that has sickened nearly 2 million people worldwide. But they didn't help prevent its spread, so how are they going to deal with it now because of their ineffectiveness?
Right, and that may have credence if WHO was at the lead forefront of helping prevent the spread of coronavirus, where instead they were actually at the forefront of trying to cover it up. And keep in mind, the World Health Organization does not have a good track record when it comes to these global outbreaks. I mean, just look at what happened in 2014 with the Ebola outbreak. And, great respected groups like Doctors Without Borders talked about the response from WHO as non-existent when you saw what happened there. So really, there are many other organizations that are very effective at helping identify and protect people from outbreaks and diseases. And unfortunately, WHO has been left behind and they've become part of the problem in the case of trying to protect China and what China did to not only create this disease, but to prevent the world from finding out what was really going on so that they could stop the spread of this disease.
Yeah, that seems to be a major factor that many have raised questions about, is that the WHO is very China-centric and, in fact, took efforts to provide cover, really, for China and their hesitation to tell the world what was happening. In fact, new reports out saying that, you know, they basically sat on this for 6 days. The Chinese Communist Party sat on it for 6 days before even alerting their own people in Wuhan, China, even though there were gatherings, massive gatherings going on. Some experts predict or project that this could have cut the spread by two-thirds.
Yeah, it's dramatic and incredibly disappointing when you see just how the Communist Chinese government tried to cover it up. But then when you look at Dr. Tedros, the director of WHO, he was literally reading Chinese talking points in the things he was saying. And that's not the kind of objectivity you want from a medical organization if they're going to have any credibility. That's why you've seen so many people calling for the director to be removed if you're going to restore credibility to WHO. And you know, we all deserve to be held accountable for the things we say and do. And if you've got an agency that's lost that credibility, either you move away from them and go somewhere else, which is what President Trump is doing, or you see the agency itself identify that they've got a problem and fix it. And they've yet to do that.
Now, Congressman Scalise, what about China? I mean, obviously, there's a problem here with WHO. It's a UN body that should be working for the entire, you know, membership of the United Nations, as opposed to just covering for China. But China here, the trail of evidence is building that they were not just neglective. They didn't just neglect to provide information, but they were deceptive in the way they handled it.
They really were, Tony. And, you know, you look at the fact that at the very beginning, there were medical experts in China that wanted the United States to come in and bring our expertise through the Centers for Disease Control to help them figure out what was going on and to help them control it internally, as well as to stop the spread. And then the Chinese government stepped in and said, no, would not let us in. I mean, CDC experts were ready to go. I was at a meeting at the White House. And President Trump was on top of this from the beginning, trying to find out and help stop the spread in China. They wouldn't let us in, and that's when you saw the president take the step that saved so many lives, untold lives, by saying we're not going to allow flights coming in from China. But by then, they had allowed it to spread to other countries, and especially in Europe, where most likely the real prevalence that we saw in the United States came from parts of Europe where it did spread out of China. So China could have done a lot to not only protect their own people in reaching out and letting other countries help them with this, but then by clamping down and literally trying to stop the spread of information, they exacerbated the spread of the disease.
Right. And by the way, you know, when the president took those steps, the WHO was critical of saying that that was not going to have any effect of limiting flights from or out of China. So thankfully, the president took those steps anyway. Speaking of, I want to move on. Yesterday, we had the Senate Majority Leader on the program discussing a number of issues, religious liberty issues and churches that are attempting to meet within the CDC guidelines. But we also touched on the Paycheck Protection Program. Which you were a key part of drafting and making sure that churches, nonprofits were involved in it. And it's been very successful, rolling out in just 6 days from the date that the president signed it. And it's working so well that they're about out of money. And so there's an effort to try to get about another $250 billion in. But that's being blocked. And Senator McConnell said yesterday it could be out of money by the end of the week. Any movement on the Democrats blocking this measure?
Unfortunately, Tony, they are digging in their heels to block the ability for these small businesses to get relief. I mean, this program, the Paycheck Protection Program, has been a lifeline. I mean, truly, described as one of the most successful programs to save small businesses in this country that are teetering on the brink of bankruptcy. We don't want to see that happen. We don't want those millions of employees, those people that work for small businesses all across our country, to have to be stuck on the unemployment lines. The whole idea is that we bring them off the unemployment rolls, back on the worker rolls, and hopefully we start talking about getting the economy opened again. But there is no economy if we don't have these small businesses to come back to. And so just when this program has taken off and been incredibly successful, and how often do you have a federal government program up and running this quickly that's actually meeting the needs of businesses and workers, you would want to keep this going. And right as it's taking off and being so successful, Pelosi and Schumer are trying to block it and kill it and literally keep the extinguish the program as it's about to run out of money. As you said, literally by tomorrow, this program could be out of money. And the president has rightfully said, I want another $251 billion to put into this program to keep it going so that we can keep those small businesses afloat. Otherwise, it'll cost the federal government a whole lot more money if you have 10, 15 million people on a sustained unemployment roll for months or longer to come. Let's keep those small businesses alive. Pelosi's got to end these games. And I think any small business who's talking to their banker today and saying, hey, if I get you the paperwork tomorrow, can I get the loan? If the banker is going to be telling them tomorrow the program ran out of money, there's one place to go, and that is to Speaker Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, who are holding it up. I think just like when you saw the Kennedy Center debacle where they held up for days that small business relief so they could get their pet projects like the Kennedy Center funded, right as they go and lay off all the workers and the musicians, they're doing it again. And I think the public's tired of this kind of politics, Tony. We should all be pulling together at a time like this, not one group trying to hold another group hostage to their demands. Let's go and keep these programs afloat, keep these small businesses afloat.
Yeah, I think people need to realize the importance of this. This is to keep these small businesses, the engine idling until the economy gets going again in another 60 days, so that these folks aren't put into, as you said, in the unemployment line, where we're already seeing 16 million Americans applying for unemployment. So this is a smart move. That way the economy is, at least the business is idling until we get things moving again. Without that, we could have a real, real slowdown of the economy. And I wonder, is that what Pelosi and Schumer want because they think it's going to affect the November elections and look poorly on the president?
Well, you know, clearly people can wonder what their motives might be. But at the same time, when you have a program that's working so successfully, and PPP, this is not a Republican or Democrat program. Right. If you're a small business in San Francisco, you're right now hanging on by a thread. And the only thing that keeps that San Francisco small business open is this Paycheck Protection Program. So it helps everybody. She's hurting everybody by keeping this program down.
Yeah, well, I tell you, hopefully they'll come to their senses. Steve Scalise, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to talk with you.
Great being with you. God bless, Tony.
All right, Congressman Steve Scalise, the Minority Whip in the House of Representatives. All right, don't go away. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the mail-in ballot effort that's going on in states now in the wake of the coronavirus. How will this affect you? And how might it impact the elections? We're going to talk about that with Brent Kylan, Vice President of FRC Action, here next on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men. Tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at standcourageous.com. That's standcourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, I've got a poll question for you today based upon our interview we just had with Congressman Steve Scalise and the president's comments yesterday that he was going to withhold funding from the WHO. That's the United Nations World Health Organization. So do you support the president withholding funding from the United Nations World Health Organization, which aided in China's initial cover-up of the severity of the coronavirus? Yes? No? Not sure? Text radio to 53445. Text radio, the word radio, to 53445. That's 53445. And hopefully I'll have the results for you by the end of the program. Also, stick around because I've got the five winners of the drawing last night for General Boykin's new book, Man to Man. I'm going to share that a little bit later. But first, in keeping with the advice of Barack Obama's former chief of staff and former mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, who said, "You never let a serious crisis go to waste." And what I mean by that, it's an opportunity to do things that you could not do before, end quote. Well, Democratic leaders around the country are using the coronavirus as a way to change election laws. They attempted this in New Mexico. They've done it in other states. In fact, even my home state of Louisiana is apparently considering this. Now, while not directly connected to the coronavirus, this past Sunday, Easter Sunday of all Sundays, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam announced he was repealing the state's voter ID law, which requires voters to actually be who they say they are. Novel idea. And he also announced that early voting was being expanded to 45 days before an election. Now, Northam said, quote, "Voting is a fundamental right, and these new laws strengthen our democracy by making it easier to cast a ballot, not harder," end quote. True. Makes voter fraud a lot easier as well. Joining me now to talk about this, Vice President of FRC Action, Brent Kylan. Brent, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you.
All right, Brent, let's talk about this. Give us a rundown on what states are doing right now changing their election laws.
Absolutely. Well, Tony, you know, it's interesting. This is literally changing by the day right now. And if you look at the presidential contest, we've had about 50 of the states have already had their presidential primaries, and not as big of a deal now that we know who the winners are probably going to be on both sides. But if you look at the other federal races and the state races, we have about 40 states still to go because so many of these laws have been pushed down the road. And then not only that, we're now seeing states like you just mentioned, Governor Northam in Virginia, there have been others that are also starting to change not just their primary election laws. So to get past, you know, the COVID-19 situation here and get this into the summer, they're actually starting to change the fall general election laws as well. And so there have been a number of different ideas proposed both at those state levels. We've had Democrats at the national level pushing some ideas such as, you mentioned it, getting rid of voter ID laws, going to potentially all mail-in ballots as opposed to having that voter in person stuff, and a number of other things. There in Virginia, they made a state holiday on Election Day. So a lot of different developments across the country. And like I said, it's continuing to develop, changing on an almost daily basis right now.
So, I mean, we're a ways away from the November election. And so I think it would be premature to be changing the laws as it pertains to the November election. But obviously, if they can change the primary election policies, it's easy to carry that over into the November election. But let me ask you this. The mail-in ballots, we talked about that yesterday. You actually see an increase in voter participation, or at least the number of ballots cast. Who knows if they're actually being cast by the actual person who gets the ballot. But the voter ID, well, I mean, what's the correlation there? I mean, you've got to show an ID to get on an airplane. You've got to show an ID to cash a check. But you can cast a vote and you don't have to prove you are who you say you are?
That's absolutely right, Tony. The narrative is that's a method of voter suppression. But just as you say, there are so many things that you need an ID for. You need a driver's license to drive. You need an ID to, you know, purchase different types of products. So it's really not a lot to ask. And, you know, I think it's interesting. Obviously, we want to make sure everybody is safe in these elections, and we don't want it to be hard to vote, but we do want it to be hard to cheat, right? And we know cheating is a real thing. This is not something that's made up. We have a lot of actual stories. In fact, back in 2012, researchers at the Pew Center on the States, they found that possibly as many as 1 in 8 voter registrations are outdated or wrong. And if they're even close, Tony, we need to make sure that, yes, people have accessibility to vote, but that we are also making sure integrity is protected. Because if the voters lose faith in the integrity of the system, they're not going to show up and vote regardless of what the method is that you provide to them.
Yeah, extremely important. And we mentioned New Mexico, the left, if you will, tried to change the law there in New Mexico, going to the state Supreme Court and forcing the state to send ballots to every registered voter. But True the Vote stepped in and blocked that. So it's not a done deal that this has to happen. Voters can stand up and speak out.
That's absolutely right, Tony. So important to watch what is being done in your state. You can contact groups like that. There's also information you can find at honestelections.org on this if you need that. But definitely watch what's going on, and you can contact groups like that to ensure the integrity is being protected in your state. And I think it's also important to remember a lot of these races are being decided by very close margins, so it doesn't take that much fraud to swing some of these states.
Yeah, that's an extremely important point. Brent Kylan, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to continue to keep an eye on this as states move to change their election laws. All right, folks, thank you for joining us as well. But don't go anywhere. Don't go anywhere. We're coming back. Waves of religious persecution. around the world in the wake of the coronavirus, in particular India, already bad, but even worse now. Ariel Del Turco joins us next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include, "To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human." "Why does the abortion industry hate women?" "China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities," and many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
To weigh in on today's poll question, which is, do you support the president withholding funding from the United Nations World Health Organization, WHO, which aided in China's initial cover-up of the severity of the coronavirus? What do you think? Do you support the president? Text radio, the word radio, to 53445, and you can participate in today's poll question. All right, the organization Open Doors USA, which is a religious freedom organization, Christian aid organization, do great work. David Curry is the president of that. They recently stated that what's happened in the wake of the coronavirus, that it has become even more dangerous for Christians in light of the current pandemic among nations that are already bad. But it's gotten even worse. China, India, Iran, and North Korea. In many of these countries, Christians are struggling to receive proper medical care. In others, Christians are already among the nation's poorest and now must contend with shutdown economies. And then in other cases, Christian aid workers are being thrust into the most dangerous situations, and oftentimes with little protection in terms of personal protection equipment. Join me now to talk more about this, Ariel Del Turco. She is the assistant director of the Center for Religious Liberty here at the Family Research Council. Ariel, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony.
All right, so what are we, let's focus in particular on India. What are we hearing out of India?
Yeah, so that report you just cited, Tony, really indicates that even in the midst of a pandemic and an international emergency, religious minorities are still being discriminated against. What Open Doors reported was that Christian healthcare workers were the first people to be chosen to be sent to the most contagious wards to care for coronavirus patients. And they were chosen by government officials to do that because of their faith and because they hold such a marginalized status in that society.
Now, I think I also saw that in many cases they're happy to do this. I mean, because obviously Christians have long filled the medical field and want to serve others and help. But it's often done without the proper equipment. And then I'm also seeing a hearing where in the broader society, because they're identified as healthcare workers, they're being kicked out of their homes and they're being treated even more poorly outside their profession just because they're recognized as being healthcare workers and potentially they're seen as contagious.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And really, that just reflects larger societal issues in India, where a lot of people are still considered unclean. And that's just the legacy of a really detrimental caste system that has been really harmful for human rights. And we see Christians be a particular victim of this society because they are often among the lowest caste members.
Yeah, India, you know, the world's largest quote-unquote democracy. It's hard to view India in that context, but they are. And we're seeing increased level of hostility and violence toward religious minorities, not necessarily at the hands of the state, but the state is certainly doing nothing to step in to provide the protections to its citizens as they should.
Yeah, you're right. There's a larger Hindu nationalist movement really that's very, very popular in India right now. And this movement asserts that to be Indian is to be Hindu. So that obviously leaves other religious minorities, including Christians and Muslims, in a marginalized place. And as you said, this is inspiring not just persecution from the government, but persecution from mob violence. We're seeing very violent incidences against churches, against pastors, against people just that are known to be Christian in communities. And
so,
the government has really...
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, Ariel, so how can we best support and stand with our Christian brothers and sisters in places like India, but India in particular?
Well, India provides a unique opportunity because while they have problems, they are still a democracy. They do want to maintain a friendship with the United States. So hopefully their leadership is going to be a little bit more accepting of what America has to say in terms of their human rights standards. So while India is an ally, we should be encouraging our allies to share our core values. And our core values is one of our core values in this country is religious freedom. So that's something that needs to be articulated at the level of the U.S. administration. And so there is a lot of hope that that can happen.
Yes, yes. And I know the president did bring up religious freedom when he was in India and met with Prime Minister Modi about a month ago. Ariel, thanks so much for joining us. As always, appreciate having you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
All right, folks. Ariel Del Turco. To find out more about the Center for Religious Liberty at the Family Research Council and the work that they are doing, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. All right, when we come back, the Pew Research did a survey on Americans and how they view the Bible in terms of its influence on U.S. policy. Should it influence the laws of our land? The results, well, they might surprise you. David Clawson joins me next here on Washington Watch. Also, I'm going to have the successful participants in yesterday's drawing for General Boykin's new book, Man to Man, that hit bookstores yesterday. So stick around. On the other side of the break, I'm going to name the five winners who will be receiving a signed copy of General Boykin's new book, Man to Man. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender, provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you're listening to Washington Watch. All right, last time, I'm going to give you a last opportunity to participate in today's poll questions. I'm going to have the results for you here in just a moment. We talked about at the top of the program with House Minority Whip Steve Scalise regarding the president's comments yesterday that he was going to withhold funding from the World Health Organization until his administration did an investigation. There is evidence to suggest that they were covering for China and China's initial cover-up of the severity of the coronavirus. So do you support the president withholding the funding from the United Nations World Health Organization? Text radio to 53445. That's 53445. You'll get a link. Fill out the poll, and I'll give you the results a little bit later. Speaking of results, I want to thank everyone who entered the drawing yesterday for General Boykin's new book, Man to Man. We had a great response. In fact, people doing it all the way up till midnight and a few after midnight. And I'm sorry, we couldn't include you. Up until midnight, Eastern time is what we said. Our five winners are as follows. Oh, I forgot the drum roll. Sharon Brewer, Alfonso Blaylock, Hank Wilson, Steve Batten, and Keith Gilley. If that was you, well, you'll be hearing from one of our team members real soon so that we can get you a signed copy of the General's book into your hands. So for everyone else, we have a link to purchase a copy at TonyPerkins.com. It's a great book, and as I said, it's really the core of our men's conference that we're doing, Stand Courageous, which is on hiatus right now because of the social distancing issues. But it'll be back. It'll be back. So stay tuned for that. All right. The Pew Research came out with a survey, which I thought was really interesting. This survey was looking at the views of Americans as it pertained to the Bible, whether or not the Bible should influence U.S. laws. And here's what they found. About half of Americans, 49%, say the Bible should have at least some influence on U.S. laws, including nearly a quarter, 23%, who say it should have a great deal of influence. That's according to the Pew Research Center. Joining me now to talk more about this is David Clawson, FRC's Director of Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you, Tony.
So did the results of this surprise you at all?
Yeah, this was an interesting poll that Pew put together. I think parts of it were to be expected, and I think maybe some other parts were a little bit surprising. You mentioned the overall poll results. Kind of dive into the weeds a little bit. You know, to be expected, among U.S. Christians, about 68% want the Bible to influence U.S. laws at least to some degree. And among white evangelical Protestants, that's the category they use, it says about 89% believe that the Bible should influence U.S. laws. The thing that stuck out to me, though, and this was kind of disappointing, that it did show that there's broad opposition to biblical influence on U.S. laws among those who are religiously unaffiliated, atheists, agnostics. In fact, 78% say the Bible should hold little to no sway, including 86% of self-described atheists who say the Bible should not have any influence on U.S. legislation.
Yeah, the poll is very telling in terms of when you look at the age demographics, and I'll get to that, but I want to go back to the positives before we jump into the problem aspects. Here's something I found that was very, very interesting, not surprising, because I know it to be true anecdotally, but among those, you mentioned white evangelicals, 89% said the Bible should have a great deal or some influence on U.S. laws, 89%. That's, you know, 9 out of 10. That's quite significant. But when you look at black Protestants, it's 76%. It's the next highest category of people who believe the Bible should have influence on our culture and on our laws, rather. I think that's one of the reasons that the media and, you know, and even the political structure tries to keep white and black Christians apart. You know, constantly seeding the ground with things that drive wedges between them because they have a very, very similar worldview. It's based on Scripture. And I know that to be a fact. Bishop Harry Jackson and I, he's an African-American. We wrote a book together a number of years ago, Personal Faith, Public Policy. And we came at the issues from a biblical perspective, and we were in complete agreement.
Well, absolutely, and Tony, that book that you wrote a couple of years, that's a very helpful book. And like you said, this for people who profess Christ, who identify as Christians, this shouldn't be surprising because if you think about it, much of the moral law, prohibitions against murder, adultery, theft, all of that is rooted in the Bible's concern that people who are made in God's image should live in a way where we respect one another and live peaceably together. The golden rule, everyone knows the golden rule. I think some people might not realize that that's Matthew 7:12. It says, whatever you wish that others would do to you, do unto them. And so, you know, for those who claim to be Christians, it makes sense that this poll would show that our Christian beliefs should influence U.S. law, because when they do, we see a society that's able to flourish and people are able – it's just overall good for society and the well-being of people.
Now, David Clawson, there are some who don't know history that would suggest that, oh, well, this is just something new that's come on the scene because of Donald Trump and evangelicals who support him, that they're trying to push this idea that the Bible needs to influence our policies. This goes back to the beginning of our country. In fact, you know, there are those who want to say that, you know, there's no reference to God in our founding documents, and that's clearly not true. Even in the Constitution, there are references to God, or indirect biblical references. In fact, the father of the Bill of Rights, George Mason, actually proposed the following wording for the First Amendment, which I think, you know, speaks to what they were thinking. He said this: all men have an equal, natural, and unalienable right to the free exercise of religion, according to the dictates of conscience, and that no particular sect or society of Christians ought to be favored or established by law in preference to others. clearly there was an acknowledgement that the Christian religion was an influence for our country. That is, the federal government just didn't want any one particular denomination. That was what the states, they didn't want a particular denomination being in the federal government, nor did they want to pay taxes to a church. So there's clearly a deep-rooted history of religion and the Christian religion in American society.
Oh, absolutely, Tony. Probably many of our listeners are familiar with David Barton's ministry, Wall Builders, and that quote you read could just be repeated dozens and dozens and dozens of times with American founders who recognized that what they were doing with this experiment in democracy, that they recognized God's providence and God's hand all over it. You know, next month we're going to recognize the National Day of Prayer. And throughout our history, all the early presidents, even up until the current times, having national days of prayer where we call on God, and that's just part of our DNA as Americans, recognizing this Christian worldview and the principles that we find in Scripture. That really is part of who we are as a people.
With that in mind, I want to go back to this Pew poll. Because I think it explains a lot of things going on in our society today. Number one, I want to go back to the top line of the 49% say that the Bible should have a great deal or some influence in our society. Now, I want to jump to the other side of the ledger. 50% say it should not have much or should have none. That is, you know, of course, when you consider the margin of error, I mean, we're evenly divided. We are divided. And this is what we see in every election. This is what we see in every public policy debate. We are a divided nation. We have half that see, you know, partially through what I would just, you know, broadly say is a biblical worldview. And then you have another half that is adamantly opposed to that biblical worldview. Therein lies the conflict that we see in our culture today.
You know, you're absolutely right, Tony. And, you know, we just got through celebrating Easter. And I think we've talked about this on this show. You know, my hope is that for many of those people who don't think the Bible should have any influence on our law and our public policy, actually will take time during this quarantine and self-distancing time to look around and see who is just courageously and heroically serving their communities. And I think what they'll find is it's the churches. It's the right. Christians who are the ones on the front lines, running the food banks, serving doctors and nurses, doing all sorts of things to try to engage their community. So there really is, like you said, we have a big world divide in this country, but I think there's also an opportunity in that as well.
Oh, there's always an opportunity. As Jesus said, the field is wide unto harvest. And so clearly there are tremendous opportunities. And right now, people are open because, you know, people who are hostile to that biblical worldview are often the ones who are filled with anxiety and fear because they have no foundation to stand upon. But I want to go to another aspect of this survey that I thought is insightful and I think requires action on our part. And that is when you look again at the breakdown, looking at I don't want to use too much of the inside jargon, but you look at the crosstabs, you look at the demographics, you look how it breaks down. Another clear distinction is in the age category. I want to look at the ages 18 to 29. 30% say that the Bible should have a great deal or some influence on U.S. laws. Well, the other side of the ledger, 69% says it should not have much or should have none. That, in my view, is the product of public education and how the left has hijacked public education and has rewritten American history and how the courts have pushed religion out of our schools and stigmatized religion and turned so many children away from it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that is very problematic. I think probably the most problematic aspect of this poll is seeing this divide among age where older Americans think the Bible should influence policy, whereas younger Americans don't hold those same views. And especially for Christian parents that are reading this poll. They need to realize they're not going to, unfortunately, they're not going to get help from their public schools. They're not going to get help from the broader culture. They're not going to get help from the entertainment industry. It's up to Christians to be, Christian parents to be the disciple makers in their home, because if they're not going to do it, the younger generation is simply not going to learn about the biblical foundations of this country, but even broader, the biblical foundation of their faith and just even the gospel. So parents should take this should be a warning sign to Christian parents of the need to really make sure that they're going to be disciple makers in their homes, because as it is right now, they're not going to get it anywhere else.
Yeah. Not just the need, but the responsibility. It is, you know, the Lord has given us, entrusted to us as parents, children. He has given us the authority to teach them, and He's given us the responsibility to teach them. You know, we're to teach them as we sit down, as we walk in the way, as we get up. I mean, there's no time in which we should not be teaching our children the principles of Scripture. It should be as natural as breathing that we're sharing with them the truths of Scripture as they apply to our lives. And that's one of the reasons we're doing the Bible reading program. By the way, I want to mention that because we just started today with Joshua as we're reading through the Bible in a chronological fashion. And it's our two-year Through the Bible program. And it's been great for our team and our families as we walk through this together. And so it's not too late to join. Go to frc.org/Bible. And it's a great time to pick up as we're reading in Joshua. But, you know, David, we just went through about how the parents were to teach their children. And Moses, his final words, teach your children to share with them the history. And I would suggest to you that this element of this Pew Research poll that shows such a wide disagreement on the issue of the Bible's influence on our laws in this age category suggests we've not been doing that. And parents need to. They need to take on that responsibility. Certainly they can delegate the authority to teach their children to the local school system, but ultimately they're going to be held accountable by God, because we cannot delegate the responsibility. That remains ours as parents. And so we need to be sure of what our children are being taught, and we need to make sure that they're being taught what the Bible says and how it applies to the lives, to our lives and to the culture in which we live.
That's right, Tony. And there's no better time to start that than right now, while we're all under quarantine. We're all having to stay here at our homes. So I encourage anyone, I'm reading through the book of Joshua right now, and people can join us at frc.org/Bible and join us starting now, reading through the Scripture and going through the Scripture with children. So there's no better time to start doing what we've been talking about than right now.
All right, David Clawson, thanks so much for joining us. Great to talk with you today,
thanks,
my friend.
Tony.
All right, folks, thanks, here's Tony. The poll numbers real quick. Well, let me see. I just lost it on my phone here. Well, I'll give it to you tomorrow. My phone just went out on me. All right. Glad to have you today. Hope you're back tomorrow. Hope I'm back too. Take care. Have a wonderful night.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.